The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another program. The week is just flying by. Lots to get to on today's program. Yesterday, a gorgeous sunny day here at Edstone. Today, it's rainy and cold. Shifted gears just like that. On today's program, we probably won't have quite as much time, given the size of my bundle of clips to play for you today. But if we have time, we'll continue on with our study on bringing honor and glory to God's holy name. That's coming up later on today's show. Well, the biggest revelation coming out of the impeachment hearings yesterday is that Kiev is actually pronounced Kiev. Now, some lawmakers are still wrestling with whether to say Ukraine or the Ukraine, but at least, hopefully now, we can all agree on how to say Kiev going forward. Kiev in Ukraine. I thought to set this up, I'd just go through a couple of articles before getting to the bundle of clips, because I think that these articles do a pretty good job of just demonstrating or showing what it is the president and his administration is up against. He talked at length during the campaigning back in 2016 about the deep state or draining the swamp, as he said over and over again. And he has done that to some degree. There's lots of creatures in the swamp, you could say. But they don't like it, and they're pushing back as hard as they can. This article from the Washington Times, it's by Rowan Scarborough, and I think today we'll probably deal more with it since the impeachment proceedings just got started off, and who knows how long this is going to go, maybe for another couple of weeks, and I don't think there's going to be quite as much drama. I could be wrong, but for the Democrats to put forward these first two witnesses yesterday, you would think that that's their star witnesses, as Jim Jordan said, and it didn't work out so well for them, so it's hard to see them going anywhere but down from here. And I also don't think that the buzz surrounding this hearing, these impeachment hearings, I don't think it's quite as intense as it was for Brett Kavanaugh a little over a year ago, and even the Mueller hearing back in July. There was lots and lots of anticipation leading up to that, because for 3 years they had been saying, all of his enemies had been saying that he was a Russian agent, that he was working with Vladimir Putin, and they thought surely the Mueller report would bring him down. And so they anxiously awaited that hearing from Bob Mueller, and that turned out to be a spectacular flop, a failure. So now we're in November, now we're in impeachment hearings. And again, just to give you an idea of what the president is up against, Rowan Scarborough at the Washington Times, he has a piece about the National Security Council. This whistleblower, the CIA analyst, he was working with the NSC, and this is an operation operating in and around the White House that has really ballooned in growth, especially during the Obama years. It says the whistleblower is a CIA analyst and Democrat who worked closely with Vice President Joe Biden, and we pointed this out before. But it says the NSC staff ballooned under President Barack Obama from 100 to 236, and Sam was telling me this morning that it might be more in the neighborhood of 300 as of right now. 300 people working for the National Security Council. It says about 80% came as detailees from other agencies, such as CIA, State Department, and the Pentagon. So basically, you have these representatives or workers at these other agencies that are brought in to work right in close association with the White House administration, or at least that's how it's supposed to work. That's how it worked during the Obama years, because Obama made sure to surround himself with people that thought just like him. Well, as President Trump has learned, there's quite a few people in that inner circle around the White House that don't think like him, and that are very much opposed to him, and that are blowing whistles right and left, or leaking information to the news media. It says, Mr. Trump did pick a loyalist, retired Army Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, as his first national security advisor. And we know what happened to him. His enemy, the Obama people, they used this this little-known law or statute, the 1799 law called the Logan Act. They used this to take down General Flynn. It was all part of an operation headed up by Peter Strzok. He was the one who interviewed him and supposedly caught him in the lie, even though the FBI initially said there was no lie there. So Flynn was out, and he was out early on. It says the post-Flynn National Security Advisor was retired Army Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, a renowned military strategist and Iraq War commander, but not, here again, not a Trump loyalist. Flynn was, McMaster wasn't. It says another Trump critic on the NSC staff is Army Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. Vindman was one of the witnesses. We'll probably be hearing more from him in the next couple of weeks. But he was one of the witnesses who testified in those whatever you want to call them, basement depositions, I guess. Auditions. That's what some of the Republicans said yesterday. They were auditioning all of these potential witnesses that they wanted to make sure they got the right ones for an impeachment hearing. It's all coordinated by the Democrats. They're putting forward the witnesses they want. We can't hear from the whistleblower because he has all these strong ties to radical leftists. It says Colonel Vindman immediately filed a complaint against his commander-in-chief with the NSC Council after listening in on Mr. Trump's July 25 phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky. It says, created by federal law in 1947. So here's the NSC, the National Security Council. It was only brought into existence in 1947. The founders had nothing to say about this, or so many of these other executive departments or departments that are an extension of the executive branch. That would be the White House. Created in 1947, the NSC has expanded its staff and influence. President Eisenhower relied on a staff of fewer than 20. Today, it's 236. Those NSC salad days may be coming to an end. It says National Security Advisor Robert C. O'Brien, who replaced John Bolton, so it's been like a revolving door almost for the NSC chief. But it says Robert C. O'Brien, who replaced John Bolton, said on CBS's Face the Nation that he's planning to streamline the bloated organization. This was from November 10th, so just a few days ago. Here's what the National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien, had to say about the NSC and what he was planning to do with it. Clip one.
One of the things that I've talked about is that we're streamlining the National Security Council. It got bloated to like 236 people up from 100 in the Bush administration under President Obama. We're streamlining the National Security Council. There are people that are detailed from different departments and agencies. My understanding is Colonel Vindman is detailed from the Department of Defense. So everyone who's detailed at the NSC, people are going to start going back to their own departments, and we'll bring in new folks, but we're going to get that number down to around 100 people. That's what it was under Condoleezza Rice. She came and met with me. I've met with a number of my successors. Right. We don't need to recreate the Department of Defense, the Department of State, the Department of Homeland Security over at the White House. We've got great diplomats and soldiers and folks that do that work for us in the departments.
So here you had this small NSC, or what was supposed to be a small NSC. It just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, especially during the Obama years. And as he said there at the end, look, we don't need to recreate the Department of Defense or the Department of State. We already have those massive agencies. We don't need it right around the White House, so we're going to be streamlining it. We're going to trim it back down to about 100 people, which is what it was during the Bush administration. I think it's all part of draining the swamp. And as I say, the swamp creatures don't like it. They don't want to lose access. They want to continue on like Anonymous, writing op-eds for the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, or maybe an anonymous book. They want to blow whistles. They want to bring down this presidency. And they're actively working to do it. We played clips earlier this week from the former ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, who mentioned that two insiders, Tillerman and who's the other guy? Well, it was two the chief of staff and the general chief of staff, and then Tillerman, who was the secretary of state, and how that they went to Nikki Haley and wanted her to sort of help them prevent Donald Trump from going forward, or his administration, his agenda from going forward. This is Andy McCarthy at the National Review. He says it's Trump versus the policy community. Trump, John F. Kelly, that's his name. Kelly and Tillerman. And Haley just revealed that earlier this week. Trump versus the policy community, says Andy McCarthy. It's interesting to read the testimony of Vindman, along with such other foreign relations luminaries as this week's impeachment witnesses, Bill Taylor, George Kent, Yovanovitch. She's coming up, I think, later. It says at the same time that Nikki Haley's about is out with the memoir. And then he talks about, you know, her revelations about Kelly and Tillerson and so on. It says further on, the government's policy community has gotten so political, it has forgotten that its mission is to implement the president's policies, not undermine them. So all those agencies, they're an extension of the executive branch. The executive branch, it is Donald Trump. He's the executive branch. And as McCarthy brings out in this piece, the way you protest something that you don't like is by resigning, not by working to undermine the president's policies. He's the chief policy maker. Now, the framers, they didn't want a king like they had in England, but they certainly didn't want the presidency to just be, you know, no power or authority at all. There were checks and balances for sure. That's why you have Congress. That's why you have the Supreme Court. But here are all these bureaucrats who think that it's their responsibility to keep this president in check. Unelected bureaucrats. McCarthy says, never forget, the coup is driven by policy differences. The coup. Remember the attorney for the whistleblower. As soon as Sally Yates was fired, he said the coup has started. That was in early 2017. He said it's going to lead to impeachment. And how many times have the Democrats and their allies in the media been talking about impeachment ever since Donald Trump came into office? They've been talking about it from the very beginning. And truthfully, I think some of the other complaints they had about, well, we should impeach him for this. They probably had more to go on with something, with some of those other things than they do with this Ukraine nonsense. But this is what they've thrown all of their eggs into this basket. McCarthy says it's policy differences. That's what's driving this. The left will tell you it's not. It's driven by lawlessness, they say. But the left treats all disagreement with its policy differences as lawlessness. And when it can't pull that off, it slanders and it slanders the dissenters as outlaws. That's how the Supreme Court slot on the line, a widely admired, with a Supreme Court slot on the line, a widely admired jurist with a peerless record of mentoring his law clerks, mostly women, into high professional achievement, somehow becomes a serial rapist. They made this distinguished jurist, a serial rapist. Brett Kavanaugh turned him into a rapist. That was just a little over a year ago. That was all brought out in congressional hearings. It says we don't have to agree with the president in order to agree that he is president. We can fight against his policies when they are wrongheaded, but we can't fight against his authority to make policy. That fight is what elections are for, not impeachments. Otherwise, American self-government, the accountability of the policymaker to the voters whose lives are affected, collapses. See, it all collapses if you start having people right there within the administration actively working to undermine and to resist against the president's authority to make policy. That's his job. That's why people vote him into office. He was voted in by 60-some million people. These other two witnesses that were on display, and I'm sure they've had a decent record of service in the government, but nobody voted them into office until yesterday. Most of you probably had no idea who they were. Here's what Devin Nunes had to say. He had an opening statement sitting right next to Adam Schiff, which is always fascinating to watch because there's no love lost between these two. But here's what he said in one of his statements yesterday, clip two.
I'll conclude by noting the immense damage the politicized bureaucracy has done to Americans' faith in government. Though executive branch employees are charged with implementing the policies set by our president, who is elected and responsible to the American people, elements of the civil service have decided that they, not the president, are really in charge.
That's what it boils down to. These executive branch employees, they work for the president, and there's elements of the civil service that have decided that they, not the president, but they're the ones who are in charge. These diplomats, these bureaucrats in Ukraine, in this case, Eastern Europe, some of them don't like President Trump's policies. They don't like the new direction. It is obvious. I read the quote from my father's article yesterday. It is obvious that there's a new direction for the United States of America. And what was that figure I gave to you yesterday? Over 90%? I think higher than that. That contribute to Democrats, people in the deep state, bureaucrats, diplomats. Overwhelmingly, they align with Democrats. So there's quite a few of them that have had their feathers ruffled a bit with the new direction. They don't like it. You can see some of that even in yesterday's testimony. They don't like the fact that the president's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, he's coming over to Ukraine and kicking up some dust and saying, hey, there's a lot of corruption here. You should take care of this. They believe they should take care of this. Now, they did acknowledge, if you saw some of the proceedings yesterday, they did acknowledge that Ukraine is rife with corruption. They did acknowledge that. But that's their job. As the policymakers, they see themselves as the policymakers. They're negotiating. They're the diplomats. They're the ones in contact with people on the ground there in Ukraine. And so who does the president think he is to send a lawyer, to send Giuliani over to Ukraine when there's all kinds of corruption? And they know there is. Switching back to Nunes. In his opening statement, he talked about this as being a kind of a sequel to the Russia hoax. And what strikes me about this particular part of his statement is just how quickly the Democrats switched from Russia, Russia, Russia to Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine. This is clip three.
After the spectacular implosion of their Russia hoax on July 24th, in which they spent years denouncing any Republican who ever shook hands with a Russian. On July 25th, they turned on a dime and now claim the real malfeasance is Republicans' dealings with Ukraine. In the blink of an eye, we're asked to simply forget about Democrats on this committee, falsely claiming they had more than circumstantial evidence of collusion between President Trump and Russians. We should forget about them reading fabrications of Trump-Russia collusion from the Steele dossier into the congressional record. We should also forget about them trying to obtain nude pictures of Trump from Russian pranksters who pretended to be Ukrainian officials. We should forget about them leaking a false story to CNN while he was still testifying to our committee claiming that Donald Trump Jr. was colluding with WikiLeaks. And forget about countless other deceptions, large and small, that make them the last people on earth with the credibility to hurl more preposterous accusations at their political opponents.
That's just recent history he's bringing to our minds. He's reminding us of what they were saying a few months ago, last year, 2 years ago. So we should forget about all of this supposed evidence of collusion, all the leaks, the Russia hoax, the spectacular implosion that happened on July 24th, and then on July 25th, that's the phone conversation, the day after Mueller's testimony, on July 25th, they turned on a dime. And now all the malfeasance, well, that's with respect to Trump and Ukraine, not Trump-Russia. They're the last people, really, on Earth that should come forward with these kinds of scurrilous charges because they have no credibility. That's what he's saying. He went on to say this, clip four.
Anyone familiar with the Democrats' scorched earth war against President Trump would not be surprised to see all the typical signs that this is a carefully orchestrated media smear campaign. For example, after vowing publicly that impeachment requires bipartisan support, Democrats are pushing impeachment forward without the backing of a single Republican. The witnesses deemed suitable for television by the Democrats were put through a closed door audition process in a cult-like atmosphere in the basement of the Capitol, where Democrats conducted secret depositions, released a flood of misleading and one-sided leaks, and later selectively released transcripts in a highly staged manner.
A cult-like atmosphere down in the basement of the Capitol as they auditioned all of these witnesses and then had very selective leaks. And the media, of course, would then take those leaks and run with it. So after the auditions, now they have the witnesses in place to bring down the President of the United States. And so yesterday you had Ambassador Taylor, and then you had George Kent as well. I forget their exact titles. I think Taylor is the acting ambassador, and I have Kent's title later on in my notes. But here's what Mr. Nunes finally had to say regarding these two witnesses, or he greeted them in this way, clip five.
Ambassador Taylor and Mr. Kent, I'd like to welcome you here. I'd like to congratulate you for passing the Democrat Star Chamber auditions held for the last weeks in the basement of the Capitol. It seems you agreed, witting or unwittingly, to participate in a drama. But the main performance, the Russia hoax, has ended, and you've been cast in the low-rent Ukrainian sequel.
July 24th, that's when the Russia hoax collapsed. And then July 25th, here comes the low-rent Ukrainian sequel. That's Devin Nunes speaking, his opening statement, sitting right alongside Adam Schiff, who's leading this sham impeachment hearing. In this next clip, you'll hear from Bill Taylor. He's testifying as to what he brings to the hearing. Clip six.
Mr. Govan, what I can do here for you today is tell you what I heard from people. And in this case, it was what I heard from Ambassador Sondland. He described conditions for the security assistance and the White House meeting in those terms. That is, that were dependent upon, conditioned on, pursuing these investigations.
This is only the fourth time in U.S. history that we've had an impeachment hearing, one back in the 1800s. Of course, Richard Nixon and then Bill Clinton. And now Donald Trump. And it starts off with this star witness, as Jim Jordan called him, who says that I'm here to tell you what I heard from people. What I heard from people. This is a man who's never spoken to Donald Trump. This is their lead witness. This is day one of impeachment hearings. And he's there to tell, and of course the media really ran with his testimony because in addition to what he testified previously in the basement, he added that he heard about a conversation from Ambassador Sondland. It was on the phone. It was at a restaurant. The one on the other end of the phone then told him and others what Donald Trump had said. And so he's here now to testify that there actually was a condition put upon the money the United States would give to Ukraine. You have to first investigate Joe Biden and his son and Burisma. There's your quid pro quo. Jim Jordan, who had quite a few good things to say or ask yesterday, here's how he summed up this entire impeachment proceeding, clip 7.
We're going to have more witnesses like we've had today that the Democrats will parade in here, and they're all going to say this: so-and-so said such-and-such to so-and-so, and therefore we got to impeach the president. Actually, we can get more specific. We covered this a little bit ago. They'll say something like Ambassador Sondland said in his deposition, where he said, Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I conveyed this message to Mr. Yarmouk on September 1st, 2019, in connection with Vice President Pence's visit to Warsaw and a meeting with President Zelensky. And if you can follow that, that's the Democrats' plan and why they want to impeach the president. That's what we're going to hear over the next couple weeks.
That's what we're going to hear. So-and-so said such-and-such. I'm here to tell you what I heard from people. It's all based on hearsay. And according to one Democrat, that's exactly the way that it should be. Here's clip 8.
Hearsay can be much better evidence than direct, as we have learned in painful instances.
That's Democrat Mike Quigley. Hearsay can be much better evidence than direct evidence. This can be much better evidence than direct. They are so obsessed with impeaching this president that they're willing to actually suggest that hearsay is better than direct evidence. That's really the way they tried to bring down Kavanaugh just last year. They brought forward all of these so-called witnesses who had a lot of hearsay. And you had all the Democrats. Remember Hirono saying, he should be believed. He should be believed. Or these women, I should say. They should be believed. Their charges about Kavanaugh. Just because they say it. If they come forward and say that it happened in a party 30 years ago, you should believe them. And then look at all of the lies in the Steele dossier. Same thing. This is what's underpinned all of these hearings and investigations. Just lots and lots of hearsay. No evidence, no facts, hearsay. And really, what you heard there from Democrat Mike Quigley, it's a pretty important revelation, because it's basically an admission that there's nothing illegal that happened in that phone conversation. It's basically an admission that there was no quid pro quo. As the president keeps saying, read the transcript. Read it for yourself. And so here comes this Democrat that says, well, now, hearsay can be much better evidence. Even if he didn't say it directly in the phone chat, we know from others who might have overheard it. There they go, divining all of this evil intent. Adam Schiff, if you remember, he, before the transcript was released, he said there was proof of, I think, 7 or 8 quid pro quos in that phone conversation. And then the transcript comes out, and he's made to look like a fool. So then he gets up during a hearing and basically paraphrases it, talking in place of Trump as if he's the leader of a mafia or something. Yesterday, by the way, he said, I didn't bring the clip, but he said he didn't know who the whistleblower was. The Washington Post revealed weeks ago that his office had contact with the whistleblower in August, I believe it was, suggested that he get a lawyer. Everything was carefully staged, planned, and so on. They're carefully concealing his identity. Well, everyone knows who it is. But then yesterday, on live television, he says, I have no idea who the whistleblower is, but I'm going to try to conceal his identity. Well, how's he even going to do that if he doesn't know who it is? It's back and forth and back and forth. You see, Donald Trump was never supposed to release the transcript. That's what exposed this nefarious plot. They weren't expecting him to release the transcript. And so they've been caught. And yet they have to go with it. July 24th, a spectacular failure. The Russia hoax fully exposed. And July 25th, they turn on a dime. My father had an article in August. Can President Trump get control of his own divided government? This is the article where he talked about the William Barr memo and how that God really exposed these evil designs. My father said this, Mueller's efforts were part of the deep state that flowed from President Obama's administration right into Trump, Mr. Trump's presidency. Those unelected lawyers think they know better than everyone. My father says, I think God set them a trap and then shredded the case for obstruction that Mueller was trying to prove. That's part of God temporarily saving America by the hand of Jeroboam. It's all part of God temporarily saving America. My father said in that piece how that President Trump's probably going to get more control of his government. Even though every step of the way they fight him. Here's a Democrat congressman yesterday saying, hearsay's better than direct evidence. When have you ever heard? This is a smart man. I don't know if he's a lawyer or not. But he's on the congressional committee maintaining that it's better to have hearsay than it is direct evidence. Jim Jordan brought it back to some direct evidence. Clip 9.
We got six people having four conversations in one sentence, and you just told me this is where you got your clear understanding. Which, I mean, even though you had three opportunities with President Zelensky for him to tell you, you know what, we're going to do these investigations to get the aid. Didn't tell you three different times. Never makes an announcement. Never tweets about it. Never does a CNN interview. Ambassador, you weren't on the call, were you? The president, you didn't listen on President Trump's call and President Zelensky's call?
I did not.
You've never talked with Chief of Staff Mulvaney?
I never did.
You never met the president?
That's correct.
You had three meetings again with Zelensky and it didn't come up.
And two of those they had never heard about as far as I know.
And President
there was no reason for it.
President Zelensky never made an announcement. This is what I can't believe, and you're their star witness.
This is what he can't believe. Never was in on the conversation, never talked to Donald Trump. Had three conversations with the president of Ukraine, and in all three of those conversations, he said there was never any pressure. There was never any quid pro quo. No evidence. But you know what he did have coming into that hearing? He had heard some things from other people. He heard things from other people. This is their star witness. This is probably their high watermark. It's going to be going down from here. It'll be interesting. You just kind of assumed going in, well, surely there's a majority of Democrats in the House. They'll all surely vote for impeachment. But you have to wonder. Some of those Democrats that won just last year in red districts, you have to wonder which way that they're going to vote, even, of course, it's not going to go through the Senate anyway, the conviction, that is. But you begin to wonder even about the impeachment. There's lots and lots of deranged thinkers on the Democratic side of the aisle, for sure. There's lots of people that would have voted to impeach him at the start of the hearing yesterday. It's guilty, now let's have the hearing, just like that post headline said yesterday. That's the way it is for a lot of them. But for those that won in red districts, and generally Republican districts, who knows how this might play out. But here's their star witness. He didn't listen to the conversation. He never met the president. Listen to what this left-wing legal analyst over at CNN had to say. Clip 10.
Because the one criticism of these two witnesses, which I think is very much legitimate, it's not really a criticism, it's just a factual statement, is that neither of them had direct contact with the president.
Neither of them had direct contact with the president. And the aim here is to bring down the president of the United States. Here are the two star witnesses. They've never even met the president, but they have heard things. And hearsay, don't you know, hearsay. That's even better than direct evidence. Here's one of the other witnesses. You'll hear the exchange between George Kent and the lawyer for the Republican sides, I believe. Kent, I see here in my notes, he's the Secretary of State for Eastern Europe and the Caucasus. This is George Kent answering questions from Castor. I think it's Steve Castor, the lawyer for the Republican side. Clip 11.
Given Hunter Biden's role in Burisma's board of directors, at some point you testified in your deposition that you expressed some concern to the vice president's office. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And what did they do about that concern that you expressed?
I have no idea. I reported my concern to the office of the vice president.
Okay, and that was the end of it? And that nobody...
You would have to ask people who worked in the office of the vice president during 2015.
But after you expressed the concern of a perceived conflict of interest at least... the vice president's engagement in Ukraine didn't decrease, did it?
Correct, because the vice president was promoting U.S. policy objectives in Ukraine.
And Hunter Biden's role on the board of Burisma didn't cease, did it?
To the best of my knowledge, it didn't. And my concern was that there was the possibility of a perception of a conflict of interest.
So this is George Kent saying that he told the vice president, then Vice President Biden, back in 2015, he reported it to the office of vice president that, look, this looks pretty bad. This looks pretty bad. Hunter's on the board of Burisma, and you'll hear later about this company. He thinks that Burisma ought to be investigated for corruption. So you've got the son of the vice president on this board in Ukraine. Well, I don't even think he was in Ukraine. He's just getting paid $50,000 a month. And then the vice president, Joe Biden, is there promoting U.S. policy objectives in Ukraine. And then you know all about the video from early, what was it, last year, 2018, where Joe Biden is bragging about the fact that he went over there in 2016 and insisted that they fire this prosecutor in Ukraine before they got the billion dollar funding. In other words, it was a quid pro quo. If you don't do this, you're not getting the money. Looks pretty bad, said George Kent, the star witness for the Democrats. Kent, as I say, well, you heard it in that exchange there. He had this testimony earlier in the basement, you know, during the auditions, where he talked about his level of discomfort in 2015 and how that the administration officials, the vice president's office, they just brushed off his concerns. Nothing to worry about here. Mind your own business. This is from his testimony earlier. The basement hearings, he said, I raised my concerns that I had heard that Hunter Biden was on the board of a company owned by somebody that the U.S. government had spent money trying to get tens of millions of dollars back, and that could create the perception of a conflict of interest. But they just dismissed his concerns. And now those things are being exposed. Never would have been exposed were it not for this administration. Never would it have been exposed were it not for Donald Trump. Listen to what Mr. Kent had to say about Burisma, the name he mentions, the Ukrainian name he mentions right at the start of this clip. That's the CEO of Burisma, clip 12.
We thought that Mykola Zlochevsky had stolen money. We thought a prosecutor had taken a bribe to shut the case, and those were our main concerns.
And are you in favor of that matter being fully investigated and prosecuted?
I think since U.S. taxpayer dollars were wasted, I would love to see the Ukrainian prosecutor general's office find who the corrupt prosecutor was that took the bribe and how much it was paid.
So he's basically saying, I think maybe Burisma should be investigated. This is their star witness admitting that Burisma, Hunter Biden's on the board of Burisma, and he's saying this company ought to be investigated. It should be investigated. Here again, one final clip from this George Kent, the Secretary of State for Eastern Europe and the Caucasus, clip 13.
There are and always have been conditionality placed on our sovereign loan guarantees for Ukraine. Conditions include anti-corruption reforms, as well as meeting larger stability goals and social safety nets. The International Monetary Fund does the same thing. Congress and the executive branch work together to put conditionality on some security assistance in the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative.
This was from his opening statement, an astounding remark, because again, at the center of this controversy is the fact that, not the fact, but this is what they say happened in that conversation, that phone call, is that President Trump said, we're not going to give you aid unless you investigate the Bidens and Burisma. And of course, he said nothing like that. But then in his opening statement yesterday, he says there always have been conditions placed on sovereign loan guarantees. In other words, we'll give you the money if you do this, this, and this. That's always been the case. And then what did he say at the end of that comment? The International Monetary Fund does this. And then in the United States, it's Congress and the executive branch. They work together to put conditionality on some security assistance in the Ukraine, he said. So as long as it's the interagency, as long as it's everybody, all the policymakers, everybody has a say, but it certainly can't be President Trump. This much we know. If he picks up the phone and says, hey, you're not going to get aid unless this happens, then that is worthy of impeachment. But for the rest of us in the deep state, I mean, that's just, it's garden variety activity as far as we're concerned. Standard procedure. There are and always have been conditions placed on our sovereign loan guarantees on Ukraine. And all the more so with Ukraine, because it's one of the most, historically, it's one of the most corrupt nations in the world. Jim Jordan brought this out when he was questioning these two witnesses, clip 14.
55 days between July 18th and September 11th, that there was a delay on sending hard-earned tax dollars of the American people to Ukraine. We're not talking any country, we're talking Ukraine. Ernst & Young said one of the three most corrupt countries on the planet. Our witness on Friday, she testified in her deposition, corruption is not just prevalent in Ukraine, it's the system. So our president said, time out. Let's check out this new guy. Let's see if Zelensky's the real deal. This new guy who got elected in April, whose party took power in July. Let's see if he's legitimate. Now, keep in mind, as has already been discussed, in 2018, President Trump had already done more for Ukraine than Obama did. That's right. President Trump, who doesn't like foreign aid, who wanted European countries to do more, who knew how corrupt Ukraine was, did more than Obama because he gave him javelins. Tank-busting javelins to fight the Russians. Our witnesses have said this. Others have said this. Obama gave him blankets. Trump gave him missiles. But when it came time to check out this new guy, President Trump said, let's just see. Let's just see if he's legit. So for 55 days, we checked him out. President Zelensky had 5 interactions with senior U.S. officials in that time frame. One was, of course, the phone call, the July 25th phone call between President Trump and President Zelensky. And there were 4 other face-to-face meetings with other senior U.S. officials. And guess what? Not one of those interactions, not one, were security assistance dollars linked to investigating Burisma or Biden.
5 interactions with top U.S. officials, including President Trump himself on July 25th. And not one time was there any linkage between the aid we'll give you and investigating the Bidens. Not one time. Just the suggestion in the phone call that, hey, you should look into the corruption, but not in any way linked to the foreign aid that Ukraine secures from the United States. That's Jim Jordan. You heard from Nunes earlier, and you can see why the Dems really pushed hard during the last election cycle to try to take both of those individuals out, creating scandals out of thin air about Jim Jordan, and then saying, well, Nunes comes from California, so we've got a real shot there. They want to take those men down. There's not too many of them that are standing up to this corruption. There's only a few, and they're doing a fairly good job, like my father has said about the president himself. It's something to behold to see the way that he pushes back. Well, getting back to this linkage, Jim Jordan kept dwelling on that with the acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Mr. Taylor. Here's clip 15.
So 3 face-to-face meetings, it doesn't come up, no linkage whatsoever. President Zelensky doesn't announce it before the aid is released on the 11th. And yet you said you have a clear understanding that those 2 things were going to happen. The money was going to get released, but not until there was an investigation, and that, in fact, didn't happen. So what I'm wondering is, where did you get this clear understanding?
As I testified, Mr. Jordan, this came from Ambassador Sondland.
He didn't get the clear understanding from President Zelensky. Every time he talked to him, President Zelensky said, hey, it was a perfect conversation. It was a perfect phone call, which is basically what Donald Trump's been saying all the time. No pressure, no linkage, no quid pro quo, nothing. So where did you get this clear understanding? This is a witness who has a clear understanding that there was, in fact, linkage. He got this clear understanding from other people. He heard conversations, not from the U.S. president, not from the Ukrainian president, but from other people, Ambassador Sondland in this case. Well, John Ratcliffe, for his part, another lawyer on the Republican side, talked about the many times that the Ukrainian president stood in front of microphones at press conferences, insisting that, look, President Trump's never applied any pressure on me. And we should add that there is no, that we know of, there's no investigation going on into the Bidens, even though Mr. Kent said that there should be, at least with respect to Burisma. Here's the Texas rep, John Ratcliffe, clip 16.
The Ukrainian president stood in front of the world press and repeatedly, consistently, over and over again, interview after interview, said he had no knowledge of military aid being withheld, meaning no quid pro quo, no pressure, no demands, no threats, no blackmail, nothing corrupt. And unlike the first 45 minutes that we heard from the Democrats today, that's not secondhand information. It's not hearsay. It's not what someone overheard Ambassador Sondland say. That was his direct testimony. Ambassador Taylor, do you have any evidence to assert that President Zelensky was lying to the world press when he said those things? Yes or no?
Mr. Ratcliffe, if I can respond.
My time is short.
Your time
is short.
Yes or no? That's right. I have no reason to doubt what the president said in his...
Okay, very good.
He has no reason to doubt that what President Zelensky said is true, which is a good point to bring up. if you believe that there was quid pro quo, if you believe that there was linkage, if you believe that President Trump was pressuring the Ukrainian president to investigate the Bidens or else he wasn't going to get the money, if you believe all of that, again, this is what the whole impeachment sham is based on. If you believe all of that, then you have to believe that Zelensky is lying and lying repeatedly. Well, this witness couldn't even say that. I have no reason to believe that what he said wasn't the truth. And so this kind of built toward the final point that Mr. Ratcliffe wanted to make, clip 17.
In this impeachment hearing today, where we impeach presidents for treason or bribery or other high crimes, where is the impeachable offense in that call? Are either of you here today to assert there was an impeachable offense in that call? Shout it out. Anyone?
No response. Where is the impeachable offense? Where is the treason? Where is the bribery? Where are the high crimes and misdemeanors? The framers drew it up the way that they did. They used that language for a reason. Because they didn't want the House of Representatives to just impeach a president strictly because he has a different foreign policy. Simply because he has different policies than Democrats. There has to be a high crime here, like treason or bribery. There is no crime. The crime is on the other side. It's all a well-orchestrated cover-up, a gigantic hoax intended to conceal the actual lawlessness that's going on. All of this quid pro quo, pressure, spying, going back to the Russian hoax, the spying, getting the help of foreign governments to investigate other people. That's all happened, and it's been aimed right at Donald Trump. That happened in the previous administration, and it's carried over. A sham of an investigation, a low-rent sequel to the Russian hoax. As Mr. Nunes said, the president put out a short video yesterday in response to all of this. And here's what he said, clip 18.
What's going on now is the single greatest scam in the history of American politics. The Democrats want to take away your guns. They want to take away your health care. They want to take away your vote. They want to take away your freedom. They want to take away your judges. They want to take away everything. We can never let this happen. We're fighting to drain the swamp, and that's exactly what I'm doing. And you see why we have to do it. Because our country is at stake like never before. It's all very simple. They're trying to stop me because I'm fighting for you, and I'll never let that happen.
That's President Trump yesterday, a short video that he tweeted out, or the White House tweeted out, about the single greatest scam in the history of American politics. He said there that he's fighting to drain the swamp. And that's why there's so many swamp creatures that are lashing out the way that they are. Because he's downsizing the NSC. He's firing people that are undermining his policies. But he's the president, not the bureaucracy. He's the one that the American people elected. They didn't elect the bureaucrats. He is the executive branch. The State Department, the DOJ, all those things, they flow out from the executive branch. It's not the other way around. And so when it comes to changing policy, or making policy, or hiring diplomats, firing diplomats, assigning ambassadors, reassigning people, whatever it is, This is his decision. And if he seeks a multitude of counsel before making it, I guess that's up to him. If he doesn't, then that's up to him as well. But what did McCarthy say in his article? This is coming down to Donald Trump against the policymakers. Trump versus the policy community. Never forget, the coup, McCarthy says, is driven by policy differences. The left will tell you it's not. It's driven by lawlessness, they say. But the left treats all disagreement with its policy preferences as lawlessness. And when it can't pull that off, it slanders the dissenters as outlaws. Well, as I said at the start, we had too many sound bites to try to squeeze in more material in a second segment, so we'll reserve that for tomorrow's program. We thank you for joining us today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll see you tomorrow.